I am privileged to be a member of one of our church's general agencies. A general agency is one in our denomination that serves all of the United Methodist Church worldwide. I am one of 35 members of the General Commission on the Status and Role of Women. And I've served in that office for the past 7 years. I have 1 year to go before my term ends. And in that privileged place, I have learned a great deal. Sometime I'd like to tell you more about what I've learned, but today I want to focus on just one thing. We met last week. As you may have noticed, I was a bit weary last Sunday morning. I had arrived home at 3:30 and had gotten a couple hours sleep before Sunday morning. So I'm not responsible for anything I said last Sunday. I don't remember much of it. It was a short night. I was in Oklahoma City for several days. 35 of us from all over the world gathered. And one of the things that we did was we talked with some of the women who represent the American Indian community in Oklahoma. And you know, these days you can't discount the positions that women hold, because one of those women was the executive director of the Office of Indian Affairs for the state of Oklahoma, a pretty influential office. We don't have an Office of Indian Affairs in Pennsylvania, but they do in Oklahoma, and it is a powerful political presence there. So one of those women was the leader of that agency. I learned a great deal in talking with these American Indian people. And among the things that they wanted me and my colleagues to see before we left Oklahoma City was the great statue on the dome of the state capitol in the center of town. Now, the Oklahoma state capitol is not as old as the Pennsylvania state capitol, celebrating 100 years this year, but it's getting there. But when the building was built, they didn't put a dome on it. It was designed for a dome, but there was no dome there, and they just added the dome in 2002. And on top of the great dome is a statue of an Indian brave. He is 17 feet tall. So even from the ground, he is an imposing figure at 17 feet. And his name is the Guardian. He stands with his lance, as you can see, his lance piercing his legging and planted in the ground, at the ready, not at the ready to throw, but at the ready to defend. And he is there, this Indian brave, on top of the Capitol building. He is there to symbolize that he will never be moved from his duty to guard the land and the people of Oklahoma. And of all the things that I saw in Oklahoma City last week, that was the thing that stands out most in my mind. That great statue atop the dome of an Indian brave, facing south but looking east, a stern look on his face, guarding the people and the land. And the reason that impressed me so much is this. I also learned that nobody has more right to be angry and resentful of this nation than do the American Indians. You see, they were moved to Oklahoma from all over the country. They were moved there to get them out of the way of the westward expansion of our nation. When the Cherokee people moved to Oklahoma, they called their movement the Trail of Tears. And that expression has been adopted by all the other Indian tribes, and there are many of them, Shawnee and Apache and Pawnee and Cherokee and Cheyenne and Seminole, Arapaho, Choctaw, Wyandotte, Comanche, Delaware, and on and on. The Trail of Tears was adopted by all of those tribes as a description of their removal from their native lands to the state of Oklahoma. The land then was given to them by treaty, and it was to be their possession for as long as the grass grows and the river flows. But you know that land was taken from them too when oil was discovered on it. They have every reason to be angry for what has happened to them. Every reason to be resentful, but they are not. I could find none of that. No matter how I questioned them, I could find no resentment, no anger in the Indian people I met. Instead, they give themselves as the guardian of the land and the people of Oklahoma. Jesus spoke to his disciples, and when he talked to them, he used terms that have always been riveting for me, and I'm sure for you, because they are so gruesome. If your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. If your foot causes you to sin, cut it off. If your eye causes you to stray from God's way, tear it out. Gruesome images, aren't they? Terrible images. But they give us an idea of how valuable this kingdom is, of what Jesus speaks. He says to us, don't let anything stand in your way. Don't let anything divert you from the course that leads you to God's kingdom, for you see, it is so valuable. Your hand, your foot, your eye. But you know, there are times when Jesus overstates something in order to make a point. And when I've studied this passage, that's what I've been taught, that Jesus is overstating something here to get our attention and to make his point. He's overstating, because who of us would cut off their hand? Why would you need to? Well, I've come to the conclusion, my friends, that that is not correct, that Jesus was not overstating his message here when he says, cut off your hand, your foot, your eye. In fact, he was understating it. He was pulling back from what he really intended in order to say something that we could understand. Jesus' real message is much more difficult than cutting off your hand, your foot, and tearing out your eye. Which is more difficult? To cut off your hand or to cut out of yourselves the resentments that you carry? Which is harder, to cut off your foot or to cut out of yourself those angers and hurts that are legitimate and justified and right, and yet they are diminishing your life and making you less than you can be and holding you back? Which is easier, to tear out your eye or to rid yourself of the selfishness and the self-centeredness that diminishes all of us and our community? Which is harder, to remove any part of your body or to sacrifice your sense of entitlement that you deserve all you have and more? I know that you or I, if we had an injured hand or a diseased foot or a painful eye, we could go to just about any medical center in our land and find a surgeon who would remove that diseased part of our body and do it with almost no pain. Painlessly. But where do we go? Where do we find a surgeon who will remove from us the selfishness and the self-centeredness? How do we go about tearing out the anger and the resentment that diminishes our souls? Where do we find a surgeon to do that? And how do we get out of ourselves and get rid of that sense of entitlement that destroys our community and our relationships with others. There is no surgeon to take those things out, and there is no one to do it painlessly. For to sacrifice those things, those legitimate angers, and those justifiable hurts, and those resentments that we carry with us because others have wronged us, there is no surgeon who can painlessly remove those things from our souls and from our spirits. It will be painful. But the place that you go to rid yourselves of those things is to Jesus our Christ. He is the one. He is the surgeon who removes those things from us that constrict our spirits and diminish our souls. He's the one who can take them out of us. And it can be done, and your life and mine can be redeemed from all that holds us back. Won't be painless. Any more than a person in Jesus' day could have had a hand removed painlessly. Won't be painless, but it can be done. If we want to have it done. If that's what we desire. And so, I ask you today, would it be possible for us, like the American Indians of Oklahoma, to cut out of ourselves those spiritual handicaps so that we too can become the guardians? Like the statue on the dome, you and I are called to be the guardians of God's people and the guardians of God's land. Can we find in ourselves the spiritual strength that the American Indians of Oklahoma have? The ability to let go of the resentment and the anger, to leave it behind us, and to take our stand on God's behalf as God's people, as God's guardians. Well, we come today to the Lord's table with Christians all over the world who have begun, and now we participate in the middle as the sun moves westward and people rise to greet the morning. They will arrive at the Lord's table where we take our place too. The Lord's table is a place of joy and acceptance and faith and hope. The Lord's table is a place of joy and goodness. But the path to the Lord's table is a trail of tears. It is a trail of tears. It was a trail of tears for Jesus. And it is for you and me too. And for our church, our community of faith, it is a trail of tears because it is painful to let go of the resentments and the anger and the selfishness and the self-centeredness and the entitlements that we carry with us. It is a trail of tears, but we arrive at that place where Christ welcomes us, His whole people, His redeemed people, His well-loved people. The chaplain of a state prison received a request from the father of a young man who was interned at the prison. The young man had committed a robbery and he had been sentenced to many years at the prison. And he was angry about it and he was bitter. All of that legitimate anger and bitterness and sense of entitlement resided within that young man. The boy's father came to visit him every week. He took a day off from work and rode the bus across the state to visit his son in the prison. But the boy steadfastly refused to see his father. The chaplain was asked to intervene, to plead with the boy to see his father, but the young prisoner refused. But despite his refusal, every week, the father took off work and boarded the bus and rode across the state, hoping to see his son. Every week, it became the young chaplain's difficult task to go and ask the son, "Do you want to see your father? He has come to see you. He is in the waiting room there for you." Then he would have to bear the news of the son's refusal back to the father. And the father inevitably would thank the chaplain gather his belongings and head toward the door, board the bus for the half-day ride back home. One day, after telling the father once again that his son would not meet with him, the chaplain reached the end of his patience, and he said, "I don't know why you're here. No one would do what you are doing. Your son is an embittered, defiant young man. Give up and go back home and get on with your life. No one would put up with this kind of rejection. Week after week, nobody would do this." Well, the older man looked the younger one straight in the eye, and he said, "God has put up with it for centuries." And he picked up his belongings and headed out the door, only to return the next week and to continue to do so week after week. What will it take for us to let go of the legitimate anger that we have and the resentments, the anger that you know that is within you that divides you from members of your families? There are children who have not spoken to parents or parents to children for years. There are neighbors who live within 10 feet of each other in their houses and do not speak to each other in this community. There are husbands and wives who engage in nuclear war every day inside their homes. And the angers and the hurts are legitimate. They're real. Other people do hurt us. And in this congregation, there are hurts and angers between us that we need to let go of and put behind us, legitimate as they are. What will it take for this great physician, this Christ of ours, to enter your spirits and cut those things out of you? He will walk with you the trail of tears. He will walk it with you every step, and together you will arrive at this table where the joy and the peace of salvation await you, and the redemption of Christ is yours. Would it be possible? Would it be possible for us, like the American Indians of Oklahoma, to allow Christ to cut out of us all those spiritual handicaps that diminish our souls and constrict our spirits, so that we can give ourselves to this Christ as the guardian of God's people, the guardian of God's land? Let it be just so among us and among all God's people in every place. Amen.